So now we're going to move on to Mira. Mira is going to talk to us about the role of essential surgical care and anesthesia in the post-2015 era. And she comes to us from the Global Alliance for Surgical Obstetric Trauma and Anesthesia Care.
I'm just going to steal some water. So in the spirit of keeping everyone awake, I just wanted to thank everyone for being here, and thank you to our moderator and all the other panelists. I'm going to do a quick survey to start off with, so I'd appreciate your participation. So I'd like anyone who has ever had a surgery in their life, whether it was a cesarean section or a minor procedure or a repair, to lift up their hand. So has anyone had surgical care? Has anyone had a family member, you know, if you keep your hands up, for those that haven't lifted up their hands, if you've had a family member who's had a surgical intervention that's either saved their life or prevented a disability. So as we can see, even though surgical care is not classically something that we like to discuss at an American Public Health Association meeting, it really is something that touches all of our lives. And so the role of the name is actually too long, but the G4 Alliance is what we go for, is really to make sure that surgical care, particularly when it's emergency and essential surgical care, is made available to everyone when needed. So we'll just go through a few statistics to start, and then we'll dive into the presentation. In terms of disclosures, no relationships to disclose. Around the world, and this is all data based on the most recent Lancet Commission on Global Surgery report, which was published in April of 2015. So the current estimate suggests that 5 billion people don't have access to emergency and essential surgical care when needed. That number seems vast, but it's really when you add the affordable aspect to that statistic, it really does make sense. In 2010 alone, nearly 17 million people did not have access to surgical care or an anesthesia, and as a result, lost their lives. When we look at the global map, the Lancet suggests that in order to meet the current surgical deficit, we would need to add another 143 million procedures each year. Just some food for thought. And when we look at the distribution, it's not surprising to know that the poorest third of the world is only currently receiving 6.3% of procedures. In 2010, it was estimated to be 3.4, so it's increasing, but really not in a manner that is appropriate. So why is surgical care important? And this is really the emphasis of what I'll speak about today, and we'll frame it within the global surgery framework. So currently, and this is all based on most recent publications, as many as 70% of neonatal deaths could be prevented with appropriate access to cesarean and other surgical services. 90% of maternal deaths could be prevented with timely detection and obstetric surgery. And improvements in trauma care can save as many as 2 million lives. These are not exaggerations, and for those of you who work in the field, I'm sure you've seen this. When we look at chronic conditions, really what we want to emphasize is that surgical care is important from birth all the way until death. It's a cross-cutting issue. It's not a vertical intervention, but really we do need to integrate it across all public health sectors. When we look at NCDs, we know it's emerging as the biggest killer. I'll show you some slides later on, but really the statistics that I'm showing here, so one-third of NCDs are truly preventable. This is from some of our colleagues with the NCD Alliance and the NCD Roundtable. Prevention is essential, but if we think of all the people who are going to experience an increase in chronic conditions, particularly in low and middle income countries where 80% of deaths are occurring because of NCDs, the role of surgical care becomes very important. So 60% of cancers, for example, will require some surgical intervention, particularly in low resource settings where you might not have complex diagnostic equipment, but surgical removal of a cancerous mass can save a life. So really it's an important strategy over the life course. And then finally, why is it important? Well, it prevents disability. 25% of disabilities, again, particularly in low-resource settings, can be prevented with surgical intervention. And when we look at the most vulnerable, so children, today in the world, 95 million children are living with a disability resulting from a congenital issue or from an injury that they've sustained. And less than 10% of those with a disability are attending school. So why should we care? Well, it's a cost-effective solution. According to the most recent Lancet and Disease Control Priority Solution published by the World Bank or endorsed by the World Bank, the cost of increasing surgical capacity today over the next 15 years, really meeting that gap, is $350 billion across the world. But if we do not invest in this, they estimate that we'll see loss in GDP that's as high as 2%. And what does that translate to? This slide is incorrect. I have to apologize. It's actually 12.3 trillion, not 1.2 trillion. Just want to let that settle in, 12.3 trillion. And I'm going to skip over these for the sake of time, but just very quickly, I've mentioned some of these details on trauma. And just food for thought, the reason we say surgery and anesthesia is that often we think of surgical care as a complete package, but unless you have pain management and protection of the airway and critical care, you're really going to see an increase in death. So if we look at low-income countries in Africa, our colleagues at the World Federation of Societies of Anesthesiologists have said that as many as 1,500 more deaths are attributed to anesthesia-related mortality in some countries in Africa. So it's not a simple fix, but we really do need collaboration across sectors. Now, how can we address this? Why is this critical? If we look at the landscape, 2015 and beyond, it's really ripe for introduction of surgical care interventions and prioritization of surgical care. So I'm going to speak to you about three things today. The expanding evidence base, and I've given you all the stats up front just so we can kind of situate the issue. The importance of increased political priority and how the world is really coming together with increased global engagement and advocacy. So many of you are the experts in these fields. So infectious disease, HIV, TB, malaria, it's a success story. We can learn a lot from the role of advocacy, from the role of scientists, from the role of providers on the ground. We really are seeing a decrease in infections. It's incredibly important to continue focusing on these areas, but it is a success story. When we look to what is emerging as the next pandemic, we really see that chronic conditions and trauma-related injuries are on the rise. More people are on the roads, more people are living longer, and more people are thus living with chronic conditions. And this is a slide that we've borrowed from our colleagues at The Right to Heal. This is a film on global surgery. When we look at the statistics, this is, I think, 2 years old, injuries are currently contributing to over 5 million deaths a year. HIV, TB, and malaria, it's a success story, combined 3.84 million deaths. It's not to divert attention from infectious diseases, but really to say we have to, as a public health community, be aware of this increasing rise in chronic conditions. Again, another slide that I wanted to show, and this is courtesy of the European Environmental Agency, we anticipate globally that over the next 15 years, we're going to see a rise in chronic conditions around the world, but where it's most focused is going to be on low and middle income countries, and really that's where we urge our partners to start focusing on. Okay, so I said I would talk to you about three things. So the evidence base is number one. I've just provided you with the statistics. So what is the current burden of surgical disease? So according to The Lancet, it's as much as a third, or just barely a third, 32% of all surgical conditions, of all global conditions can be attributed to surgical disease. That means that they will require some type of intervention for management or treatment. I'll leave it at that because I've given you a few statistics at the front end. In terms of increasing political priority, well, this is a story I'd like to share with you. In 1980, the Director General of the World Health Organization, his name was Dr. Halfdan Mahler, was addressing the International College of Surgeons at their annual meeting. And he appealed to them, urged them to begin prioritizing surgical care as part of primary health care, saying surgery clearly has an important role to play in primary health care and in the services supporting it. People in need must have access to skilled surgical care at the frontline referral hospitals. Despite this appeal, and this was in the heels of the Alma-Ata Declaration, so health for all, despite this appeal, nothing really happened for the next little while. We often like to say within our organization, surgeons are lone wolves. They do excellent work, but they love doing it on the ground. So we saw an increase in medical admissions, an increase in engagement, but really surgical care stayed out of the purview of public health. So what has happened in the last 30 years? I just want to highlight some of the key resolutions on surgical care that we have seen over the years. None were clearly surgical, but we saw an increase in interest in trauma, rehabilitation services as it pertained to road traffic injuries, emphasis for the importance of emergency and trauma care, community-based rehabilitation, and, of course, chronic conditions, NCDs. However, after many years of advocacy and engagement from multiple actors and leadership from a number of country-level actors, so particularly Zambia and the U.S. government, as well as many other partners, in May of 2015, we're proud to say that the World Health Organization introduced a resolution recognizing that surgery and emergency and essential surgical care and anesthesia should be recognized as part of universal health coverage. And this was ratified by 194 member states. There's a story I can tell briefly if you promise we'll keep it amongst ourselves, even though we're being recorded. But a little bird has told us that when Margaret Chan, the current director general, saw how many countries were speaking out on behalf of surgical care, she turned to her director and said, "Did you do this?" She'd never seen so much enthusiasm for an issue. And I believe this is because countries see the impact that a lack of access to surgical care really has on the population. So it's something that, it's an idea which has been waiting to be prioritized. Okay, so how does this frame itself within the global development agenda? The WHO is one thing, what about the UN? So as many of you know, or probably all of you are aware, the UN has undergone what it calls the post-2015 process. This is the next generation of the Millennium Development Goals. What did the process look like, if anyone isn't familiar with it? So this is the best graphic we can find out there, and this is from Dalbert and the UN Foundation. It's messy, and it was a messy process, but I think this was the first time, and the UN will say this, many other partners will say this, that the populace was consulted. The process for developing this new global development plan included a number of working groups, high-level panels, community and civil society engagement, and several other activities. So I think it's worth showing the process because it was really an attempt to bring the next era of development to the people. So what goals did we end up with? So currently, in September of 2015 at the UN, 17 goals were introduced. Of all these goals, only one was health-related. So all of us should be so aware of this health goal. Of the 17 goals, there are some intersections with healthcare, and that's fine, but really we want to focus on this health goal. How does it pertain to surgical care? Goal 3.8 emphasizes the importance of achieving universal health coverage. And universal health coverage, as you know, has two components. One, we want to include financial risk protection and assurance of access to essential health care services. And under this, and as part of, and because of this WHO resolution that I just showed you previously, surgery has an umbrella, even though it's not a strong platform. What has led to this? So I wanted to show you. This is not a comprehensive slide, but the global surgery community for the last 10, 20, 30 years has been pushing for some type of prioritization. And there's a reason you probably haven't seen very many surgery sessions at the APHA, but we're trying to change that. We're trying to work with our collaborators because surgical care really needs to be implemented in partnership with maternal and child health, with NCD prevention implementation work, trauma care, et cetera. But I'll leave this up for a moment. What I want to speak to you today is about the G4 Alliance. So what is the G4 Alliance? And that is the organization that I work for, but we also have several academic partners. We are an alliance of currently 57 organizations from around the world. We founded our organization a year ago because we realized that we needed to speak in a collective voice. We provide a platform for member organizations to engage in supporting access to emergency and essential surgical, obstetric, trauma, and anesthesia care. Why these four? When you go to a district hospital, many of you have been to a district hospital, I'm guessing, you'll often have one medical provider, and that medical provider, whether they're trained in any of these conditions or any of these fields, or whether they are simply trained as a medical student that goes out in the field for 2 years and then takes over a hospital, they are delivering babies, they're delivering anesthesia, they're taking care of traumatic injuries when there's a road traffic accident or any other burn, fall, injury, and they're providing surgical care. So what we really want to do is strengthen the surgical care at that district level, the first place people go to for care around the world. What is the scope of our membership? We have everything from academic institutions to social enterprises. We have two new members joined today. Here's their current list. It's so important to collaborate across the field. And what do we focus on? So advocacy, policy implementation, working with our partners at the WHO and within countries to make sure that we can support the development of national healthcare plans, around the world. Guess how many countries have surgical care prioritized as part of their national health care plans? 2. And this is according to the Lancet. So please challenge me. Please bring me examples of surgical care. But our goal is really to get every government to recognize that surgical care saves lives. And then finally, resource mobilization in support of the work of people in the field. What are our accomplishments to date? Very briefly, I mean, we speak at the UN, we speak at the WHO, we advocate for inclusion of surgical care where needed. I will highlight a few things. So we held the first meetings on surgical care at the UN, the WHO, the Clinton Global Initiative, and the first U.S. congressional briefing, as well as other international venues. We didn't realize this was missing, but it's a gap in the field. One of our first campaigns was run over 72 hours. And our organization successfully rallied 120 global organizations to support the inclusion of surgical care metrics as part of the WHO's core 100 health indicators. So before this, there was one metric on surgical care, but if you don't measure it, countries won't implement it into the system. If you don't prioritize it, it's never going to show up as a public health priority. And we've advocated with over 150 countries around the world to push for the World Health Assembly resolution recognizing surgical care. Currently, we're in the process of rolling out a global consultative process. I welcome you to give your input. We want to make sure that we're as inclusive as possible in our advocacy and policy initiative. And really, our goal is to support WHO efforts and national governments seeking to strengthen health systems with surgical care. Here's our advocacy platform. We focus on patient advocates and key stakeholders. We engage with the media, decision makers, and key influencers, and we seek change in governance and institutional health priorities. Why do we do it? We do it because of the patients that are out there. These are some of our member organizations and partners. Thank you very much.